This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. We're very fortunate to have Alan Blinder with us this morning, and we're talking about the growing discussion and controversy over the scheduled expiration at the end of the year of the Bush tax cuts, and we're going to focus particularly on the tax cuts for people at the top of the income scale. Professor Blinder wrote an important column in the Wall Street Journal on this recently. I would note that he and Mark Zandi of Moody's also have a major study out written up in the New York Times this morning, where they have modeled the effects on the economy of the various actions that have been taken over the last couple of years, from the TARP to the Recovery Act, to shore up the economies. And if you have questions on that, he'll be happy to answer them as well. In addition, as I think most of you know, at the end of last week, the Center on Budget issued a paper by Chuck Maher, who directs our federal tax policy work, on issues involved in letting the high-income tax cuts expire. So we're going to go to Professor Blinder. He is the Gordon Rentschler Memorial Professor of Economics and Public Affairs at Princeton. He's the co-director of Princeton Center for Economic Policy Studies. He was the vice chair of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. He's been a member of the President's Council of Economic Advisors, and he is widely and justly viewed as one of the leading economists in the country. Professor Blinder.
Thank you for the introduction, Bob, and I hope one of the leading economists in the country is still a compliment, not an insult. I'll take it as a compliment. Thank you. As you just heard from Bob, the center asked me to do this call as a follow-up to the Wall Street Journal piece that I had in last Monday, especially in view of the continuing debate over the Bush tax cut. So let me just very, very briefly sort of review the case I made there and slightly bring it up to date. And the most of the purpose of this call is to answer whatever questions you have. So when I penned that piece for the journal, the extension of unemployment insurance benefits was still under debate. As you all know, it had lost several times in different guises combined with other things in the Congress. Since then, I presume not because of my op-ed, it has passed the Congress and become law, although it's only until November. So this is going to come up again. In addition, as Bob was emphasizing in his introduction, the Congress needs to decide between now and the end of the year what to do about the Bush tax cuts, and there are various opinions on that, ranging from keep them all, which a number of Republicans are advocating, to get rid of them all, to splitting the baby by getting rid of the tax cuts roughly above $250,000 and keeping the others. This is very much a live debate. So I made two major points in the piece. One, and Bob alluded to both of them, really, in his introduction. One of them is that what we really need in terms of fiscal policy is sort of one step to the left and then multiple steps to the right. That is to say, the economy looks questionable enough right now that I think there's a pretty strong case for some further fiscal stimulus, also monetary stimulus, by the way, although that's not the purpose of this call. Not a huge amount, nothing like what was done before, but something more. And the extension of UI benefits is just a perfect piece of that broader policy, but then needs very significant deficit reduction. And I would love to see it sort of promised now, although I realize that is difficult. That's the kind of comment you get from someone who doesn't have to hold, doesn't hold, and will never hold, in my case, a public office. But a commitment to deficit reduction down the line would be just what the doctor ordered. But down the line, not now, because the economy is not in a position to take either net tax increases, that's the point I'm coming to, or net spending cuts. So that was the first point. Second point is that not all budgetary dollars are created equal. Some have a lot of bang for the buck and some have very little. And you hardly hear that in the political debate. It's as if every dollar is the same, which it's most decidedly is not. In the Wall Street Journal piece, I used some multipliers that Mark Zandi had published in some congressional testimony, which showed a bang for the buck, that is, GDP increase per dollar of budgetary cost, in the range of 1.6, 1.7 for things like food stamps and unemployment benefits, and in the range of 0.35 for extending the Bush tax cuts. And that would be all the Bush tax cuts, not just the upper income tax cuts. Using those, I just did a simple back-of-the-envelope calculation to suggest we could get some substantial job creation by simply reprogramming the $75 billion that would be saved over the next 2 years by not extending the upper bracket Bush tax cuts and spending it instead on unemployment benefits, food stamps, and the like. And so that was the second message of the piece. And I think it stands today, even though a few things have happened since the piece was published in the Journal. I think that's all I need to say by way of introduction, and we ought to open the lines for questions.
This is Bob Greenstein. I'll just make a quick comment, and then we'll go to the questions. In Allen's Wall Street Journal article, and again today when he's talked about other sorts of things that would be higher bang for the buck uses of the money, whether it's unemployment insurance or certain kinds of higher bang for the buck tax credits, there is a history, the state fiscal relief, there's a history that when these measures have been adopted in past recessions as temporary measures, they always have indeed been temporary measures. They have always gone away when the economy recovered. They have not endured after the economy was still strong, adding to deficits and debt in that period. The contrast is that if the high-income tax cuts are extended, and you look at the fact that by every political prognostication, there will be a substantial cohort of people newly elected to Congress in November who will run on a platform that includes making all of the tax cuts permanent and who are predisposed to tax cuts, it suggests that the chances are, in our view, very high that if the high-end tax cuts are extended for a year or two, that the next Congress likely would extend them again. And, of course, we do have a history on the tax side of what are called the tax extenders, tax breaks that are often initially argued for on a shorter-term basis and never go away and get extended every year or two for another year or two. So there is a significant risk that if the high-end tax cuts are extended for a year or two, even though the current argument would be that the economy is weak, that they get extended again, and that ultimately, depending on when the stars are in alignment, depending on the outcome of presidential and congressional elections, they eventually could be made permanent. If indeed you made the high-income tax cuts permanent, the cost, including the cost of debt service, would be close to $1 trillion in added deficits and debt over the coming decade. So not only, as Professor Blinders noted, would you get a higher bang for the buck in boosting the economy now from different approaches with the money, not only would extending the high-end tax cuts not be an especially effective short-term policy for the economy, but it would pose significant dangers in terms of the long-term fiscal issues, dangers that the measures Allen has talked about as alternatives would not pose.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.